to Brendan?
Is it the Ides?
It is the Ides of March. It's the Ides of March, and it's the Not a Thing podcast, episode 179. It's the 15th, man.
Of course, the Ides of March. The 15th of March. Well, right in there between Pi Day and St. Patrick's Day.
One of the least thing holidays, I think. You don't want to be on the receiving end of the Ides of March treatment.
Yeah, is that something celebrated? Unless only, you're a Roman senator.
I guess, right? I mean, you know, it was kind of, they thought they were doing the right thing, quashing the imperialist Caesar, except for the whole friendship betrayal aspect of it, which is really not a thing. But we are recording this week. We're episode 179. You're right. It is right between Pi Day and St. Patrick's Day, both of which I think are more things than the Ides of March are.
Yeah, that's like the terrible filling of a delicious sandwich. You've got pie on one side of the sandwich, and yeah, you've got potatoes and whiskey on the other, but then you got stabbing in the middle. That's not a good sandwich.
No. So let's, it's interesting. And, this is only interesting if you took Latin for 4 years, like I did, but the Ides is the 15th in March, but it's the 13th in most other months. And that's because March is a longer month than the rest of the month. So if you look at, you know how the months are different sizes, like it's 31 days or it's 30 days. March is a 31-day month, so the Ides are 2 days later. This is your random Latin kind of fact from the Not a Thing podcast.
It's okay, I'm awake. I'm back.
By the way, yeah, 4 years of Latin and an AP test are not a thing. Really not a thing. Did not help me, not at all. In any case, we're gonna move on to stuff that may not help anyone. These are the not a thing stories on the Not a Thing podcast. Those of you familiar with the podcast know we like to lead it off with the negative things and only end on the happy things, or mostly happy things.
Yeah, in a good news, bad news scenario, we're going to give you the bad news first.
Right. And this week, the bad news is really not that bad, but it is kind of bad.
Dumb.
It's a
so it's some dumb news.
Yeah, some news came out about the eVolo, or I'm not sure if that's the correct pronunciation, but it's like a personal helicopter. And when you look at pictures of it, it looks like, you know, the drone quadcopters that are around I can't remember the name of them anymore. But
doesn't matter.
Yes, drone quadcopters. You've all seen them. They're kind of the centralized pod in the middle, and then there's wings out where the rotors are, and that's what this looks like. Except it's not like tiny drone size, it's human size. So a person can fit in that pod, and the whole thing has electric motors, and it'll take off, and it's supposedly a very simplified control on the inside. So you can fly it, but instead of being outside and watching your, you know, drone flying around, you're in that drone. And I think this is a horrible idea. I think,
yeah, 20 minutes of flight time.
Right.
No.
Right.
You fly around your property because you have property if you own this thing.
Right. Right. I guess it's fine if you do have property. I mean, there's no way you could use this. Well, even if you had property, you could fly it for 20 minutes, which effectively means you can fly it for 10 minutes. Then you have to turn around and fly it back. Otherwise, you're landing it wherever the heck you are 20 minutes later. And then you probably
this is like a band 70s band death simulator.
And then you can't.
You know what the danger of being in a band without any of the fame? You can die in a helicopter crash.
And then once it's down, you know that you can't charge it wherever that is. You're probably going to have to have someone drive a truck out to you to put it back on the truck and then drive it back to your compound where you would charge this. I guess this is really only not a thing for, I would say, the majority, the overwhelming majority of people. I guess the super rich who can afford to leave their drones in other people's like backyards, I guess it's fine for them. Although still not a thing, because all of the places where these drones will crash, it's just real bad. Just real bad.
You know, we have this thing called a helicopter. if you're gonna spend the money, buy a real helicopter.
Yeah. Also a lot cooler than this drone thing would ever be.
Yeah, there's no way you could mount guns on that drone.
There is a helicopter rental service. I can't remember the name of it, unfortunately, but it's in New York City, and it's meant for people that want to go from like Manhattan to their estates in the Hamptons. So again, this is one of those like the overwhelming majority of people are not using this, but it's for the people that are like the super rich, but not the super mega rich, because they don't own the helicopters. It's Uber for those people in helicopters.
Yeah. I think it'd be more likely to be Lyft.
Ba-dum-psh. Very nice. Very nice. Keeping in the flying drone kind of space, we're moving on to a story about drones that can be launched from aircraft. And we've talked about some of these in the past, about drone launching systems. There was one that was essentially like a big catapult. I believe it's the Air Force has figured out a way to do it where they launch the drones from F-16 fighter jets. And the drones fit in the launchers for flares on the F-16s, so they can hold something like 30 of them, and they're the size of like a soda can when they pop out, and then there's a little parachute that slows them down to a reasonable speed, and then the drone, which is made of carbon fiber and Kevlar, kind of unfolds out of that little canister and then can fly autonomously after that point. And this is both awesome and terrifying. I'm not sure where the mix is, though, because it is pretty awesome just because F-16s.
Right.
The story talks a little bit about how the having something that can be built into and easily retrofitted into an F-16 is actually very cost effective, because they don't have to build a new thing for the launching of drones or whatever. So in that case, this is one of the few stories, this might even be the only story that we've ever had on the podcast, about the military like doing something that saves money. Who knew?
No, the railgun, the ship-mounted railgun, that saves money.
Oh, that
the
was
cost the... per shot is far more effective. And, oh. Yeah.
Well, the coolness factor per shot is off the scale, right?
Yeah, it's a win-win. Yeah. Ship-mounted railguns and drones launched from F-16s, which is why F-16s are still around. It's not a new jet.
Yeah.
They just keep adding stuff.
Well, there was a story about the F-35, the one that's like super dangerous because like pilots are blacking out on it and stuff.
Yeah, they keep losing oxygen.
Yeah, I read a thing saying that the ejector seats, and this was just like this weird passing story, I didn't click on it, but it said that the ejector seats, they're so forceful, and they're set in such a weird way that if if you weigh less than 150 pounds, then it's potentially fatal to you to be ejected out of the F-35. So,
wow.
Yeah, I didn't click on it to read any more. It was one of those, like, just read the headlines and go, wow, that's real bad. And this is why, exactly as you said, the F-16 is still around, despite it, you know, being, I mean, it's really just a cool jet. It's the one with, that looks like it's got the missiles on the ends of the wings. I mean, that's awesome. There was an F-16 movie, right? Because there was an F-14 movie that was essentially Top Gun, and I want to say there was an F-15 movie, but
was Iron Eagle F-16s?
Was it okay? Is that
I don't know. That was those would have been an F-15, wouldn't it?
Iron Eagle? No, you know, I don't know.
Flight of the Intruder was an F-4 Phantom.
Right.
There's a lot of jet movies. People like jets and people like movies.
Yes. Jets are a thing, and jet movies are a thing, despite...
But not that shitty movie, yes, Stealth.
Exactly. And why not? Hello, drone plane. Of course it was a bad movie.
Yeah, AI gone bad? No one wants to see that.
Well, we'll talk about AI gone bad in just a minute, but we're going to stay in the swarms of drones kind of thing, move over to swarms of other things, and specifically around swarms of mosquitoes. So mosquitoes have been known to carry and infect, or carry disease and infect humans at pretty high rates. There's a lot of stuff about West Nile and the Zika virus, which is potentially causing complications in pregnant women, and ways to kind of combat mosquitoes are kind of few and far between, other than like spraying horrible things into the air onto people's bodies in order to make them work. And kind of a different way of attacking the problem is being tested and just cleared a major hurdle for testing. And this is genetically modifying the mosquitoes so they can't breed. So specifically attacking genetically modifying male mosquitoes, which are not the ones that bite you. The ones that bite you are female mosquitoes, but they're making it so the males can't impregnate the females. So in theory, it would cause those mosquitoes to die out over time. Although the more I think about it, so let me come back before I finish that thought. They are thinking about trialing these in Florida, which has kind of a large mosquito population, because there's a large amount of hanging out swampy water. Not necessarily around the coasts where the water levels drop or rising, thanks global warming, but yes, there's a lot of mosquitoes in Florida, and they're going to be trialing it in some areas around there. And this is kind of interesting because mosquitoes, as you might suspect, fly around. So I'm not sure exactly how they how the test is going to be kind of carried out and monitored. I guess they just have to keep track of how many mosquitoes they release, and then the overall kind of mosquito population. They have to be testing that over time a lot, because it would take, you know, a generation essentially for that the mosquitoes to I guess not come to the mosquito effect not to come to fruition, but to not come to fruition and have them not breed.
But it's interesting that people in Florida are worried about it, and it's already happening in 4 other countries. Like, this isn't the first trial. We had to test it other places before we let them try it in America. Thanks, Panama.
It is interesting to see like what the or how they would do that, because now that I think about it, in order for that to be effective, these genetically modified mosquitoes have to win out over kind of, you know, the non-modified mosquitoes. So are they like pimping out the mosquitoes in some way to make them more attractive to the females? They it doesn't talk at all about how they expect to win that battle.
That, I don't know, but mosquito fight sounds like a sci-fi original movie that I wouldn't want to watch. I don't like mosquitoes.
No, generally not. Generally not. I think the
actually that's a really good idea for a sci-fi original movie, because you wouldn't even have to show. You just have people reacting like they're getting bit by mosquitoes.
Yeah, yeah.
And they wouldn't need to. Yeah. Oh, the budget savings would be amazing.
Well, if the Sharknado money stops coming in, that's definitely where they're going to go. speaking of Go, we're coming back to our thought about AI's gone wrong. Google had set up a tournament between its AI, one of its AIs. They have a number of them. We've talked about a couple of them in the past. Some for self-driving cars, some for kind of turning photos into very trippy pictures of like dogs and with eyes all over them. That's the
deep, why'd you have to bring that up? I got that out of my mind. Oh man, that was too weird.
Yeah. And they've also built an artificial intelligence specifically to play the game Go, and they invited a grandmaster to come by and play in a 5-game tournament over this last weekend. And I think it completed. It was the AI came out really strongly and won the first 3 games. And it won the last one, but the fourth one was actually won by the grandmaster. So the human actually won in the fourth game. So all is not lost for humanity, at least so far.
We got one.
Hopefully, you know, the coming wars between humans and robots are not allocated on a best of 5. Scale, but the Go grandmaster, he was quoted later saying that, you know, he's definitely going to have to revisit a lot of the classic kind of strategies and things, because they're not necessarily up to par. And I think that's really where it comes down to, is that the AI is essentially unbounded. It doesn't have the historical kind of pain of losing in the way that you lose to people. And so it reminds me of like when you when if you're playing like a Call of Duty game, and you know you don't play online and you don't play against other people. And you're only playing the single player campaign and you completely destroy it, and the first time you play online against real people, you just get absolutely murdered. I think it's similar to that, in that the AIs don't, we're not giving them the chance to lose horribly, or the sentience to feel bad about losing. That's what we have to give it. We have to give it the sense that it can be crushed, because otherwise it's just happy. You know, it's like, oh, I lost, no big deal, which is really
no,
the thing.
No, don't give. No, you don't want to give AI emotion.
Oh, that comes back to the story from last week about poking robots with sticks. And
yeah, no, you can poke a robot with a stick if it doesn't feel anything. Once you start having to account for its emotions, you're asking for trouble.
Well, we should invent more games where the computers can lose gracefully, or really awfully, whatever we need to do to make ourselves feel better about the forthcoming kind of robot revolution.
Don't design robots faster than people, then you're fine.
We need a game that humans would win that computers would always lose. What would that game need to be? It'd have to be, or if they would win it, it would make us happy to watch them win it. I think that we have to do the more of the trials that they did for the robots that would like navigate the course and then open doors and turn winches and stuff, because the videos of the robots like failing at that really make my heart just sing so much. It's really great.
Yeah, but you don't want to design them well enough to be able to do it.
Right. All right. I will give a shout out to the subreddit /r/shittyrobots, which is just full of robots. It's mostly GIFs of robots like falling over and doing stuff. As long as the robots don't figure out that we're making fun of them with that subreddit, we're okay.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Speaking of kind of more self-aware things, we're going to move into self-aware cars a little bit. Not exactly self-aware, but at least aware of their surroundings.
Yeah, I hope not. Don't honk at that car. It's self-aware.
But Honda is getting into the self-driving car kind of craze. I don't know what the right word is, but they're
trend.
They're definitely jumping into the trend with the entry level Honda Civic, which costs about $20,000, which is much more reasonable than say the $100,000 Tesla. This car is not 100% self-driving. I mean, you can't just press the button and then it'll get to its destination. It uses a lot of features from other self-driving car systems, such as automatic lane control. So it can tell, assuming it can read the lane markers, if something's freshly paved or as otherwise has obscured lane markers, or if you're off-roading, you're not going to see lane markers. But in the event that you can see lane markers, which is probably the majority of commute travel, it will stay within the lines. And then the other feature is adaptive cruise control, which uses some amount of range detection to tell cars in front of and behind, and use that to regulate speed and braking and acceleration. So this seems to be geared towards the self-driving scenarios that we were talking about, that where it would be fairly acceptable to use, like in heavy commute traffic. Like, you wouldn't use this to get from point A to point B because you have to give it too many inputs on the way. But if you're using it and there's a stretch of road where there's it's completely gridded up, it seems fine for that. It seems made for dealing with kind of slow moving traffic where you're not changing lanes. And it's interesting that it's in their entry level car, which means it's, I think, very likely to get more ubiquitously out on the road. The thing that it doesn't do is, as far as I know, the cars don't talk to each other. So that's still, it's still missing that component of like a system where you can, where the cars can kind of work together to make traffic better. It still is going to generate and perpetuate traffic, I think. I don't know if it's necessarily going to make it better, except for maybe it won't crash into things. Maybe. Hopefully not, anyway.
Well, it is made by Honda, so if they did speak to each other, it would be in Japanese.
And
I'm not going to make a joke about an Asian self-driving car.
Thank you. Thank you. Racism is not a thing.
No, it is not. But there's even, no place for that here.
Even self-driving car racism.
Is that racism?
I don't know. Is AI, do AIs have races? Is that a, I don't know. Let's
That's
not.
A whole can of worms we don't need to open.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. But another interesting thing about the in the self-driving car front, I just saw a story that came from South by Southwest about Google and their self-driving cars. One of the features that they're going to be adding in and is the ability for the car to detect a yellow light and then determine if it's going to run it or not. Which I think is really interesting, because unlike a person that has kind of a gut feeling whether it can make a red light or not, the computers in the car should have a better idea of whether it knows it'll make it or not. So that'll be really interesting to see if AR cars will start running yellow lights and cheating their way into intersections and stuff. I think it's one more area where cars can, you know, it doesn't necessarily make traffic better because it doesn't necessarily take into account the effect of its driving on other cars. I think the multiplication of all of these problems is still going to result in a lot of traffic, until cars can really, you know, talk to each other to actually make the traffic patterns better. I think, self-driving cars are just, you know, going to be yet another thing in the road and one more thing that will have one less, kind of person, you know, dealing with it and thinking about it. I don't know. We'll see. Still, self-driving cars. I don't know. I'm in the market for a car. My horrible, you know, hyper-polluting diesel car is making me consider other vehicles. let's see. Talking about considering other vehicles, for games. I mean, most vehicles for games are very similar. They're all now, anyway. Current generation consoles are all based around, or they're back based around the Intel chip that has been in PCs for ever and did it in a day. Hashtag PC Master Race. ever since Sony dropped the Cell processor that was in the PS3 and went to a more traditional processor, and the Xbox One has, you know, it's a Microsoft OS, so it essentially has, you know, the same hardware guts inside. And so Microsoft revealed this week that at least one of their games is going to get cross-platform play. And so this is kind of a big deal, because now that they're all essentially the same hardware platform, it's allowing for network play between the platforms. And I think this is a thing. I hope so anyway. It makes it less ridiculous about like what console to buy. But also it'll probably affect like what is exclusive per console, which I think honestly needs to be less ridiculous about things when you can make and you don't even have to make them console specific. I just remember there being like store specific features. Like if you bought Assassin's Creed from Target versus from Amazon, you would get different features in the game, which I think is ridiculous. At least hopefully now the platforms will be at least somewhat open about their communication. I don't know.
And the game that they're starting it with is Rocket League, which, yes, I have played. It is a very fun game.
It is fun. I don't know if it's the I think it's actually a really good vehicle for cross-platform play, because it is so just pickup accessible. It's not as heavy as like an Assassin's Creed or a Hitman or Call of Duty even. It's just like, you know, cars playing soccer.
Yep, pretty much.
and it's fun. It seems not, you know, too difficult to grasp. When I played it, I did get horribly trounced, but I will chalk that up to playing, you know, against you know, kids and their damn fast reflexes.
Kids in there not having a rest of a life that takes up all their time.
Oh, speaking of time taking up things, this weekend is noteworthy in Silicon Valley, in San Jose specifically, because we're getting a comic convention again. We're getting a full bona fide comic convention in the Bay Area. A few years ago, it may even be more than 5 years ago now, when WonderCon left San Francisco to join kind of San Diego, you know, the big Comic Con in San Diego, the WonderCon moved to Anaheim, if I'm remembering right.
Ooh, so
the Bay Area,
yes,
was really, didn't have like a big comic convention for a while. I mean, it had Alternative Press Expo, which just last year moved to moved back to San Jose from San Francisco, but we didn't have like a major comic convention, you know, big press comic convention for a while. I mean, there's Image Expo, which was in Oakland a few years in a row, and that got a lot of exposure because Image's big property, The Walking Dead, had like their entire cast show up the last year, and a bunch of people went crazy for that because zombies are a thing, or at least The Walking Dead zombies are a thing. I'm not going to go out on a limb and say all zombie properties are a thing, because they're not. but in terms of kind of the rest of mainstream comics, people noticed the gap in the Bay Area, and two people specifically, Stan Lee and Steve Wozniak, partnered together to help produce it. So they're bankrolling it, they and other folks, of course, but they're the primary folks behind bringing the Silicon Valley Comic Con together, and that's this weekend in San Jose at the Convention Center. The list of people is pretty impressive for who they got to show up. Given that it's the first one, I'm, you know, it's pretty good list. William Shatner is maybe the biggest name.
Sold. I'm in. Sold.
But also Michael J. Fox, Leah Thompson, and Christopher Lloyd from Back to the Future are also scheduled to be in town. It sounds interesting. My thing with comic conventions is always the panels versus the expo floor. There's always a lot of attention for the panels, and it is cool to kind of see people and potentially get insider information or watch movies that aren't, you know, released to the general public yet. But I'm still a fan of walking the kind of expo hall and just seeing the you know, all the cosplay, and then the people that are setting up booths and going to, you know, hopefully they're going to have kind of the artist's alley where they have artists from the different books out. These aren't necessarily the biggest names and stuff, but it also means that you're going to be able to walk up to people and talk to them about comics, which is really what it's about, in my opinion. I had a really cool conversation with some folks from Oni Press one of the times I was out, and I became a huge fan of their stuff. So I don't know. We'll see. The show's running Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So, you know, hooray for Silicon Valley and comics. There's still a thing. Hopefully there's still a thing together for at least the near future anyway.
It's much less convenient now that I don't live in San Jose.
Well, it's 3 days. We could work something out, man. and I think, you know, being that that's, you know, a few days away and there's a few hours left in the Ides of March, I'm going to be kind of watching my back for the rest of the day. But I'm glad that I could spend some time with someone that I don't have to watch my back with. It's always great having a podcast with you, Brendan.
Pleasure as always. Excelsior, Alan.
Talk to you next week.
Till next time.